Good morning. While we were on the mission trip, we stayed at Trinity United Methodist Church on the east side of Nashville. This is a picture of our home for the week. There were many homeless neighbors living around the church, and in fact, the church that was built in the 1800s now served a congregation of many homeless people and their family. The amenities were certainly not what we were used to at home. The boys lucked out somehow, and they put in window units for air conditioning, and theirs worked. But unfortunately, us girls did not have a working one for the week. There were two power strips that were available for 100 people to plug in their electronic devices during the day. So you can imagine things like hair dryers, cell phones, iPads, all that thing became something that we just could not use. We also had to shower outside with a hose connected to PVC pipe with a little thing around it. Looked like a little pop-up tent. So the luxuries of home were definitely something that we missed. During the daytime each day of the week, we were split up into three different work crews. Mine served in an apartment complex for independently living seniors. And then there were two crews who worked literacy camps with children. Similar to last year, we had worship programs each morning and evening, and then we had crew devotionals every day during lunch at our work sites. Personally speaking, our group needed those devotions by the time we reached a break in our day. The work we were doing was honestly disgusting and extremely difficult, so being able to refocus on Jesus during that time was quite truly the only way that we drew strength to continue. Scrubbing a hoarder's bathroom, digging through feces-infested clothing, cleaning out pantries, under cabinets, throwing out moldy food from the back of a refrigerator because an elderly woman with back trouble couldn't reach it for years. This was not how we envisioned spending our day. However, I began to see Jesus through the work that our kids did. I saw Jesus when Deshaun stood up one evening during a worship service and in front of the whole camp shared how at work that day a little boy came up and said, "How can I get muscles like you?" And Deshaun told him, "Well, you know what? There's two really important things that I do every night. Right before I go to bed, I do my push-ups and I pray." The next day, the little boy comes running in. He can't wait to get to Deshaun, and he says, "Guess what? I did my push-ups and I prayed last night." You see Jesus on the smiles of the faces of the children who burst through the doors with excitement just because they can't wait to see their big friends who came back to spend another day with them. You see Jesus when you see these young girls walk into an elderly woman's apartment and she shares with you how she has fought and beat 12 types of cancer. And you best believe that we shared with her a No One Fights Alone bracelet. This morning, you are going to be fortunate enough to experience the same smiles and facial expressions for yourself. Our very talented Alexis Bolin has captured our trip, as she does every year. But if I do say so myself, Alexis, you've truly outdone yourself this year. So with that, I give you a week of hope.
in the eating area and having some fun and fellowship. So.
Half an hour, I haven't had like a brain strain.
So sweet, the price.
was funny. After, this. I was not a part of this. So we are headed off to our last morning program.
I forgot about that.
So this is a very last.
It's a robin.
A robin.
Yeah, big robin.
It is so cute. Look at that. So we are headed to a field trip and we are going to a printing press. I'm so excited. Like, I'm more excited than any of the other kids.
From some of our youth. So, Olivia, if you could start.
Hi, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Okay. Well, I am one of the few youth who have been on all three mission trips. I've been on Montreat, I went to Charleston, and this year I went to Nashville. And each mission trip was different and special in its own special ways. Each mission trip had its highs, its lows, its struggles, and its amazing faith-growing times. Each mission trip holds a special place in my heart, but this year was by far my favorite one yet. On group missions, we are split up into crews, and those crews are made up of different youth from different youth groups from different churches all over the country, as far from Orlando to Mississippi. They can be from anywhere. This year, Christine asked if group missions could keep us together. So in my crew, crew three, the best crew, there was Miss Christine, Elena, Ashton, Emma, and myself. And at the beginning of the week, we all knew of each other, but we didn't really know each other. And so by the end of the week, I felt really good saying that I had made four new best friends. We all grew so close through this mission trip, and it was just fantastic to see. Our crew was volunteering at Heartlands Christian Towers. It was an independent living facility for seniors, and our task was to go and do whatever the residents needed us to do, which was anything from cleaning their apartment to moving furniture to just helping out around the facility. And needless to say, none of us were very thrilled about this. For those of you who don't know, I love kids. Like, all kids are my best friend. I love kids. I love working with kids. I love kids. So I was a little upset that I wasn't working with kids, but I decided to put that aside and let God lead me to do whatever he needed me to do. I knew that God had a plan for this week and for my crew and myself, and I knew that we were placed there for a specific reason, and we just had to stay positive, keep an open heart and open mind, and try to complain a little less than usual, let's just say. So the first thing that we did when we got there was weed a garden. Now, we're in Nashville. What was it, 10 o'clock in the morning? It was hot, and we're sitting outside weeding a garden. The next thing that we did was sterilize elevators and then scrub walls for 4 hours. And that night when we got back to the facility, we had to share three words that summed up our day. And I said, "We scrubbed walls." Basically, that's what I said. And it was very hard work and not very fun, but we just decided to keep a smile on our faces anyways and know that we were doing something better. The second day was a little better, at least at the beginning. That morning, we got to meet a resident named Miss Judy. And she was a sweet lady who needed some help cleaning her apartment. When we got there, we decided to work on her kitchen first. Now, we learned Miss Judy had had two back surgeries. The first one, they messed up and they clipped a wrong cord or something, and she was going to be in pain for the rest of her life. And we also found out that her bed was so covered with clothes and little random items that she hadn't slept in her bed in 2 years. Can you imagine not sleeping in your bed for 2 years after having two back surgeries and not very good mobility? It was just so saddening to hear. So Christine and I promised to get her sleeping in her bed. So we're all working hard, and we were all cleaning her bed, and then the fire alarm goes off. They decided to have a fire drill, but they decided to have one when they couldn't figure out how to turn it off. So the fire alarm went off for 2 hours that day. It was great, great fun. So we all had to evacuate and stand in the burning heat. Needless to say, we never got back to helping Miss Judy, and it made me really, really upset. So we decided that the next morning, she would be the first person that we went and helped. So the next day, we got to the site, and we went straight to Miss Judy's room. Emma was cleaning underneath the kitchen sink, and Christine and I were working on her bed. And while we were cleaning off her bed, Miss Christine came across a piece of cloth and asked Miss Judy what she should do with it. Miss Judy then explained that it was a healing cloth, and that when she was younger, she was a part of a healing ministry. And she went around South America having priests and ministers pray over this cloth for healing and safekeeping. And that whenever she came across someone in need, she would cut them off a piece of the cloth and give it to them for them to pin to their clothes or pin in their pillowcases or to just carry around with them. We were so amazed at the story that when she asked us if we would like a piece of the cloth, we all happily said yes. At that time, some red shirts or staff of group missions were there, and they all got a piece of the cloth as well. Once we all had our piece of cloth, we prayed for Miss Judy and for her and for the ability to serve her and also healing for her back and comfort. We stayed and helped Miss Judy until it was about time for lunch, which is about 12. So we were there from around 9 to 12, helping her for about 3 hours. And right before we left, I was looking down at my No One Fights Alone bracelet. And I always have two of these bracelets, one for me and one for someone who may need it. And I'd never had the chance to give away my bracelet before. But as I was standing there in Miss Judy's kitchen, I knew that this was the moment. This was the moment that I was going to give her my bracelet. And I was so excited to do that. And so I had never gotten the chance to do that. And so I explained to her about the bracelet and the meaning behind it, and that I wanted to give it to her. And to see the smile on her face as I explained the meaning, and to see the smile on her face as I said I wanted to give it to her, and to just see how much her face lit up as I helped her put it on, and to hear her tell me how much it meant to her made the entire trip worth it. All of the hot nights and sleeping in bunk beds and no air conditioning, it was all worth it. So by the time that we left for lunch, she had a No One Fights Alone bracelet around her wrist, and she was asleep in her bed. We successfully got her into her bed, and it was just so fantastic to see. So, on this trip and through Miss Judy, I learned that no matter what you are doing and who you are helping, you're making a difference. It may not be what you want to do, and you may have to scrub walls and floors, but it's all worth it. God has a plan, and He will take care of you. I learned that if you're too busy complaining, say about not getting to work with children, you can't see the miracles that are happening right in front of you. So, trust God and stop complaining. He knows what He's doing. Amen.
Okay, so mine's less of a story about the mission trip and more of an explanation of the effect it had. And a little disclaimer, I have a lot of handwritten notes, and they're very messy, and I'm not wearing my glasses, so if I look confused, I probably am. So, throughout the mission trip, people told me that I changed a lot, and that's true, perhaps in more ways than they pointed out. But knowing about this change and being able to articulate it to you are two very different things. People told me that I seemed way more confident and happier, and I am, but it doesn't really feel like that. It's a lot easier to see change in someone else than it is to feel change in yourself. It feels natural to be this way, even though 2 months ago I wasn't. I've noticed a change in the way I present myself, but I haven't felt it. Before I went to Nashville, I was basically a completely different person than I am now. This may come as a shock to you, but before the mission trip, all of my confidence was fake. I couldn't talk to people for the life of me. I could barely order food without stuttering and making a fool of myself. Or at least it felt like it to me. It may not have been obvious, but I was kind of dying inside. I would have second thoughts about everything I was about to say, and I therefore rarely said anything. I was so quiet and so afraid of talking around people I didn't know. But now it seems as though that problem has gone away. On the trip, I could talk to people without being extremely nervous about it. I still have a bit of trouble holding conversations with strangers, and I get a bit nervous talking to people, but it's much less of a problem than it used to be. This is obvious, as I am talking to all of you. being able to actually talk greatly improved my stress levels. Before, when I would mess up talking to someone or I would do something awkward, I would get really frustrated. I would blame myself for not being able to function in society like a normal person. I got angry at myself for something that was out of my control. I started to fall into some bad habits. Whenever I would mess up, I would start to, like, absentmindedly scratch at my arms, or I'd bite at my nails even more than usual. I would chew on bracelets and necklaces. I would fidget a lot. I would pop my knuckles in my neck. It would get a lot worse around tests and performances. I didn't necessarily see it as a bad thing, though. It didn't hurt, and being able to feel something physically helped me stay grounded mentally. That's why I never really tried to stop them. The actions themselves weren't hurting anything. What was bad was the reason why it happened. I felt helpless and out of control. I didn't get to choose when I would start feeling like everything was my fault. Sometimes it would be at a really difficult rehearsal during tech week of a show. Sometimes it would be because I tripped in class, even though no one even noticed. I don't know what would trigger it, but I know that it hasn't happened in a while. Well, I still bite my nails, but that's been happening for years. The others haven't happened. Some of them became absent-minded habits, but it doesn't happen in a severe manner anymore. Throughout the week, the leaders kept repeating the word extraordinary. It got repetitive really quickly. I was sitting there during the first worship session thinking, please stop saying that word. We get it. We're great. But somewhere along the way, I started believing it instead of just knowing it. I also began to understand what I needed to do. On the mission trip, I gave up control to God. Little note here, I tried my hardest to give up control to God. But in doing so, I feel more in control. God is in control, and that really reassures me. I feel more confident that I won't be harmed. I feel happier because I don't have to worry. I'm not necessarily in control, but that isn't a bad thing.
The mission trip this year was such an amazing experience that I will truly never forget. A few days before we left, I had an idea to give up my phone during the daytimes of the week. I don't really know many teenagers who would offer to give up their phones, but it does go to show that social media and living up to people's expectations wears you out. Anyways, I knew that texting and Snapchatting were not going to be as important, as this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to serve in this place with these people to this community, and I wasn't planning on wasting it. My crew and I served at a literacy summer camp with second, third, and fourth graders. Honestly, I would rather be around older people at a nursing home than to be around seven-year-olds. But I had no idea the impact these kids would make on me. The second we got there, the kids grew on us. They looked at us and smiled and talked and laughed with us, and by the end of the first day, I had already made great relationships with all of these kids. All of these kids probably had tough family situations at home, so getting to talk and play with these teenagers were really exciting for them. And yes, several times we did get asked, "Are you guys teenagers?" For us to be the source of some of their happiness and smiles were absolutely amazing. Throughout the entire week that I'm at this place, my phone is out of the picture. It's miles away from me, so the urges to pull it out of my pocket or my backpack aren't there, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. I realized that my phone is not only a way for me to communicate with my friends and family, it's also something I'll pull out if I'm in an uncomfortable or awkward situation. I'll just pull out my phone, pretend to scroll through some social media, and act like I'm not aware of what's going on. Perfect. It's also something I'll pull out if I'm bored or if I have nothing else better to do, because I'd rather interact with something than sit there and awkwardly stare at the wall. So our phones are more than just a way to communicate. It's our security blanket, and whenever we have it right by our sides, we feel more comfortable. For me to not have my phone throughout the entire amount of times where we would have nothing to do, times where I would awkwardly sit in silence to some other people, and times where I wanted to bury my face into my phone, I couldn't. Instead, I realized how much our phones take away from our attention to our surroundings, moments, people, places. Instead of pulling out my phone, I learned how to deal with every situation without my security blanket. I learned how to be patient as we would sit there doing nothing and wait until they gave us something to do.
and also how to handle any amount of awkwardness or when we messed up, face first. I was able to cherish these kids and these moments so much more because I didn't have anything distracting me from them. I would go up and start conversations with these kids or thank God for giving me the opportunity to see these amazing works within these kids and within this organization. When I was in the car, I would sit silently and look at all the views and appreciate what I was seeing and notice things that I had not noticed before. I knew that I wouldn't be where I was with my crew and with my church in Nashville, most likely never again. It was like crystal clear vision wherever I went. By the end of the week, the relationships we had made with these kids were incredible. After a group picture, all these kids came up to us and gave us so many hugs, and they would not let go of us. And soon enough, there were kids surrounding me and all of us at literally every angle, and I almost fell down because there were so many kids on me. That was the most happiest moment of my life. These kids were coming up to me and calling my name, and I had never talked to them before, so I had no idea what their name was. Usually, it's vice versa. Kids easily forget names and don't pay attention a lot. But now it was me in the position where I could not name everyone happily coming up to me and smiling to me. And that was so incredible. The biggest thing that I took away from the mission trip this year is that God works through us and through our community in ways where we cannot even imagine. No matter where we are and who we are with, the Holy Spirit is there. And a lot of times, we have to look for it. And sometimes that means to sacrifice. Because without all these things that we put so much time and effort into, we can realize and see things that we couldn't see before. And these things, even the smallest, are absolutely amazing. Amen.
Similar to Elena, the mission trip for me this year was about giving up control. I briefly shared with you in my message 2 weeks ago how I had quit listening to God, and I was trying to do everything on my own power. I wasn't relying on the Holy Spirit, and although I tried, I was beginning to lose the relationship with Jesus that I once cherished. I've unnecessarily put a ton of stress on myself over the last 2.5 years. Slowly and fairly recently, with the help of somebody in the front row, I've come to realize that there is nothing that I can do, nothing that I can say, no activity I can create or atmosphere that I can perfect that will give the youth the relationship with Jesus that I want for them. Ultimately, He is the only one who can do that. And as difficult as it was for me, I finally moved out of the way. That was not comfortable for me, and I realized yet another thing about myself that I didn't like. I was not trusting Jesus. As pathetic and absolutely silly as it sounds, I was praying all the right words, but my actions were screaming something louder. I was really praying, Jesus, just let me in on what you're doing. I need to make sure that you understand what's going on because I know them so much better. I know the types of lessons that speak to each one of them, so just let me help you. For real, I know it sounds insane, but I felt like I knew what was better for these youth than Jesus did. I didn't trust Him to speak to them without my help. Who knew somebody so insecure could have such an ego, right? During our final evening program, as I'm still sitting there trying to figure out what I can do, what I can say after the evening program is over to really hammer home this experience, Luke 10, verses 1 through 2 appeared on the screen. And it says, after this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them 2 by 2 ahead of Him to every town and place where He was about to go. He told them, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Go. God so loudly grabbed my attention and whispered to my heart, Christine, you want to see these kids have a relationship with me, but you're too busy with your nose down trying to work yourself. You haven't looked up to see that they're here. I have them. Quit trying to do this ministry by yourself. Better than just drawing them into myself, better than them just coming to know me, I am transforming them to look like me. The work is plentiful, Christine. and there are so few workers in today's schools and in today's society. So now I have equipped this special group that you love so much to go out and work alongside you. Let them go. And to be sure his point was made loud and clear, this logo came on the PowerPoint and stayed up there for the remainder of the night. These young people are going out in the world, and they're continuing the work that Jesus began in the week in June. And we are here today to guide and you to experience a piece of what we felt. We want to invite Jesus to come and spend time with us this morning. And I know I sort of tried this 2 weeks ago, but wanting to take it a step deeper, our youth have placed cards that we received on the mission trip. The purpose of these cards is to guide you in spending time with Jesus. So the instructions are spelled out on your card, and Verna will be playing our final reflection this morning. I want you to spend time with Jesus, looking over these questions. Be open and honest. Nobody's going to collect your card or read it. This is between you and him. The youth have placed these cards inside the Bibles in front of you. They're in every other seat, so if you don't find one directly in front of you, look around. But they're in the Bibles around you. And I want you to just spend time with Jesus.